Hello everyone, welcome to Awaken Your Higher Mind radio show. I'm Alexander Defoe. I hope you tuned in last time and got something out of that program. This week we're going to focus on hypnosis and NLP, which is neuro-linguistic programming. And it's a technique that the media and television and a lot of authorities use to instill certain ideas in people's minds on a mass scale. It's also a technique that you can use to change perceptions very easily and to change your influence over your own ideas and beliefs about the world. So what we'll be talking about specifically is how you can choose to think more for yourself and more freely rather than accepting the ideas that are broadcast to us through those mediums. So we'll also talk about some practical techniques you can use that involve the use of hypnosis to benefit your mind rather than just sitting back and unconditionally accepting the hypnotic suggestions that are implanted into our minds through all of those different sources. So I'd just like to talk a little bit about how hypnosis works and introduce you to some of the concepts. In hypnosis, there's always a concept of conscious mind and unconscious mind. And a lot of the influence in our world actually comes through the unconscious level. So we're not aware that we're thinking a certain way or that we're more inclined to think this way. It happens unconsciously, and therefore we just accept certain ideas as fundamental, as fundamental truths. But the interesting thing is that a lot of the time those fixed notions are not truths at all. And what you'll find on television, on various mainstream sources of information is that the way language is used and the way suggestions are used kind of inclines us to accept that, a certain product is better than another, a certain politician is better than another, and all of these different ideas that are presented to us as truth, when in fact they're just opinions and ideas, and we can pretty easily let them go and don't have to create fixed realities around them. Having said that, the conscious mind and the unconscious mind, a lot of hypnotic suggestion works on a level that is unconscious and quiets a slow brainwave state. So in hypnosis, we have four brainwave states that we talk about, alpha, beta, theta, and delta. And in our everyday lives, we're kind of living in like a beta state, and everything is racing along pretty quickly. You're constantly being bombarded with ideas, thoughts, and behavior. Do this, do that, this and the next thing. It's not a very kind of like slow and relaxed lifestyle that most people are living in. Rather, it's in a constant pace of things, and this speeds up the brainwaves, and that makes us kind of more focused on living rather than kind of taking a step back and reflecting, and just we're constantly taking in information, taking in all of these ideas. So when we enter a hypnotic state, we're kind of slowing down those brainwaves, which is the same thing that happens before sleep. The last time I was talking about this technique that we can do before sleep of kind of reflecting through the day, and that really helps, that really liberates us from that constant pace of things. And we can do the same with a hypnotic state to simply just kind of allow ourselves to go into that meditation in the evening, because it comes naturally when we begin to relax to go to sleep. But you can also use this hypnotic technique, anytime you want to simply sit down during the day and unwind. And all it really involves is picking up on your thinking and picking up on, the fast pace of, that you're constantly thinking, I have to do this, that, and the next thing, and just stopping and letting that go for a second. And you find that everything slows down a little bit. And the great benefit of this is that you can create your own suggestions from this state, your own hypnotic commands to send to your mind. And you can greatly use hypnotic trance to benefit yourself rather than simply being, a kind of a wave for other people to broadcast to you, their messages, what they want. So there are several elements involved in hypnosis. There, you know, a sense of relaxation where you're feeling quite relaxed and, you know, letting go of that pace, that sense of pace. Then there's the actual hypnotic suggestions, which you'll be able to pick up on a lot of television and on a lot of media, techniques such as repeating the same thing over and over. You know, if you find you repeat the same statement again and again, eventually it kind of gets through. You know, if you're resistant at first, for example, a politician repeating the same, you know, idea over and over for, you know, several weeks, it lowers the resistance of someone who's watching that same person speak. And this works the same way with us. You know, if we have a certain belief, you know, I'm not very good at, you know, drawing, for example, or, you know, I'm not very worthwhile at this or that, and continue repeating this to ourselves in our minds, eventually we hypnotize ourselves into believing that. That's how suggestion works. But in the same light, we can also use it for positive change. If you decide on what you want and, you know, how you want to feel, you can also broadcast those messages to your mind. The problem here is that we don't find a lot of positive messages in you know, mainstream television, mainstream media, in the world in general. When people go home to their TVs in the evening, those are not the type of messages that they're constantly bombarded with. You know, rather, the suggestions are fairly different to that. They're quite negative and instill these negative notions in your mind. And you'll find other techniques, other hypnotic techniques too, like ambiguity, where the message isn't very clear. You know, the person speaking to you is using terms that are very vague, like, you know, awareness or understanding or knowledge and, or science or, you know, purpose. These type of words open up the unconscious mind, so to speak, whereas more concrete words tend to cause you to focus more on a conscious level. So we can use words, and that's what neurolinguistic programming is about, using words to put you into a certain state of mind and to take you out of certain states of minds. And in hypnosis, we often talk about a technique called anchoring, where you're defining a certain state of mind and then you're associating it with sensory information. And that every time you experience that sensory information again, you go back into that same mind state. So an example I can give is, you know, when you're feeling really happy, for example, and you hear a certain background music, you know, playing wherever that might be. And if this happens, you know, a few times, eventually, you know, when that background music starts playing on its own accord, you begin to feel those emotions again. You start feeling happy. This happens all the time. You know, you might not notice it. You might find it, you know, really surprising that these anchors actually exist, but that's how you know, the unconscious mind works. It sets up all of these sensory-based anchors in the world around you. And as you go through your daily experience, it triggers off certain emotions. You might feel like really upset for no reason, or, you know, feel quite angry when something happens, when someone talks in a certain tone of voice. It kind of, on an unconscious level, reminds you of something. And what you'll actually find is that it's very calculated, this use of anchoring. A lot of the time, you know, even on websites, I've seen people setting up a certain way of communicating their message that, you know, tries to capture people's emotional state. And certainly on television, as I mentioned before, you know, you'll find a lot of these techniques are used, like anchoring, like triggering you into a certain sense, a certain feeling. And brands do this all the time. You know, the major brands that try to always push their products in your direction, they certainly use anchoring techniques too. Now, this is really disempowering, in my opinion, because so many people are not aware of this use of language and this use of programming and this use of you know, putting people into a hypnotic trance when they're not aware of it. And a lot of You know, hypnotherapists will say that you can't be convinced of something that you're not willing to take on. But with enough repetition, with enough, getting into someone's sensory language and messing around with these emotional states, you could really, you know, create some strong influences. And before you know it, society is moving, you know, in a certain direction that may actually be quite destructive and negative. But then on the other hand, you know, people that are aware of how to use these techniques that I'll be talking about on this show today, they can actually use them to kind of turn the tables a bit and, you know, empower themselves and say, you know, I actually want to be responsible for the programming that I place into my own mind. And I want to create messages that are actually going to be empowering and that I can use to, you know, further my own spirituality or actually do what I want to do in life rather than kind of taking on someone else's ideas, you know, your partner's ideas or your friend's ideas or, you know, general ideas that are floating around out there about, you know, what's congruent with a sense of happiness or what's congruent with a sense of, you know, achievement, you know, what you need to do externally to experience those things internally. And a lot of unhappiness in our world comes from that incongruence, so to speak, because there is no one fixed notion of, you know, do this and then you'll be happier, do this and then you'll be successful. But we're constantly bombarded with those types of messages in our world. And, you know, the nature of NLP and hypnosis is that someone will get an idea in their mind for something as basic as the television, and then they'll actually act as a broadcasting signal to other people. So in general conversation, you'll find those same ideas come across. And that's why NLP can be so powerful, because if you have a really positive kind of mindset and a belief that anything is practically possible and, you know, you can find happiness within yourself, and you're broadcasting that to, you know, your friends and those who are close to you, you can create really profound changes in their lives and kind of get through all of that negativity that is constantly flowing around in this programming, in the broader spectrum of society. So, you know, rather than just making this show kind of about, you know, all the different ways that media and society shapes hypnotic suggestions and to, like, essentially shape our reality, which is what they're doing, you know, I'm going to actually focus on a few methods that we can use personally, you know, to create a positive state within ourselves and to use hypnosis for positive purposes, you know, because you'll find, you know, dozens and dozens of radio programs that talk about control on a wide scale. And it's really about doing something about it and using, you know, the power of the mind to accept suggestions and create reality from almost nothing, and to take that and actually use it for good. And what you'll actually find is that is what happens. You know, our perception of reality is practically created through those ideas. Beliefs become perception. And self-limiting beliefs, such as, you know, I must do this, I must be this way, you know, I can't have that because whatever the reason might be, they actually shape our perception, and therefore we omit certain things from our reality. We just, you know, kind of ignore opportunities that come up, or whatever it is that we've decided upon in our minds, you know, no, this is impossible. We just kind of close off completely and don't even see that in front of us, since you've already decided, you know, it's not possible. You won't see it. And a lot of people do this with spiritual concepts, so to speak, like, you know, energy, telepathy, psychic awareness. A lot of people say, no, I mean, it doesn't exist, because they're so adamant about kind of putting their foot down and saying, no, this doesn't exist, that they actually will not see it in front of them. And this happens with all sorts of things. Even something as basic as, being open, you know, to certain people, being open to a relationship, that's quite a major one. If someone has decided, you know, like certain relationships aren't worthwhile, they'll just close off and won't be able to see any opportunity. So we'll just move on to a technique that you can use that comes from neurolinguistic programming, or an adaptation of neurolinguistic programming, because it is very flexible. And what this technique involves is looking at the language that's all around you. And you can do this quite simply by looking at the language that you use, because all of language is essentially language that we've picked up from others. They've picked up from someone else, and it's being framed into their mind as being congruent with reality. And it's not congruent with reality all the time. So a good starting point is to look out for certain words in your language. You look out for specific words like I can't, or you can't, or simply the word can't, or the word should, I should do this, or the word shouldn't, or the word must. Another good word is the word but, or the word if. You know, if only that were possible, then this would be possible. And surprisingly, like if you actually notice these words in your life, you'll find that we all use them quite excessively, because a lot of people were raised, you know, to use those words and to frame their reality. And often they're not accurate depictions of reality. They don't, you know, give you accurate perceptions of reality. When you take a word like, you know, I must do this, for this particular technique, what we can do is examine that word. You know, so you must do that according to who, or, you know, where did you, you know, first pick that up, that you must do that. And a lot of the time, where you pick that up will actually be a subjective opinion that you may have incorrectly perceived as absolute truth. So it may be something you picked up from a friend or a parent, or even TV or social circles, or you know, music even. People do pick up ideas like that and stick on with them for years, from something as simple as you know, something that they heard, you know, even from an acquaintance. It can just, you know, these ideas can just stick in the mind, because that's the very nature of our minds and physical reality, is that they're very rigid and tend to hold on to things that give a sense of security, which we'll talk about later. But what you can then do is to transfer these words into more flexible words. So you're no longer being in that rigid mind state. You're then allowing yourself to open up to your unconscious mind, which has, you know, much greater wisdom and understanding than your conscious mind. So take a word like should or shouldn't, for example, and simply change it to might or may. You know, that may be true. So you're still giving that possibility, but you're not saying it's 100% should always, under every single circumstance, without exception, you know, in every single possible imagined context. Like when you say may instead, you're saying, okay, maybe it's true in 99% of the time, but it could be 1%. And that 1%, your unconscious mind can really work with that and start seeing things a different way. And if it is actually true what you're saying, then it doesn't matter. You know, you don't have to be adamant about saying, you know, this is reality and this is how reality should be. If you're just saying that this is how reality may be, then, you know, if it is that way, then that's fine. And if it's not, then at least you'll be open to that alternative. Using the word but, I mean, like, it creates an excuse, it creates an exception. When you take something on but then say but, you're kind of saying, you know, actually, I don't take that on. I don't accept that idea at all. I think this. And you can use a word like and, even, you know, using and instead of but. You know, if someone says to you, this is my opinion, and you say to them, I hear what you're saying, and you know, I also think that you don't have to, you know, totally absolutely exclude other people's perception of the world or even your own ideas by using, you know, words like but, because they tend to kind of create exceptions. And a good reframe for using the word if is simply when. You know, if you're saying, if I had, you know, more money or more time or more of this, you know, more training, more preparation, then I would be able to do that, which would lead to more happiness for me or more success or whatever it is you're aiming for. You can simply use, you know, when I do this, because using if creates a sense of uncertainty. And a lot of the work I do, even therapeutically with NLP, really picks up on this, because when you say the word if, your unconscious mind responds kind of like, okay, so there's like uncertainty here. That's what your unconscious mind hears. And it creates self-doubt and uncertainty. And, you know, you're not quite sure, which is why, you know, I have to kind of reinforce the importance that these words, you may not see them as that harmless. You may just think that, you know, I'm spending time talking about this, but it's really elementary stuff. But it's not, because at the unconscious level, these words literally change our reality in front of our eyes. A simple statement, a simple phrase that you hear can have, you know, very, very little impact on your conscious mind, but at the same time, it can shape your entire reality on the unconscious level. And this is how we can use words to change the unconscious mind from an inflexible state where it simply serves the conscious mind and you're using maybe 1% of your brain power, to a flexible state where your unconscious mind can influence your conscious mind and drastically increase the amount of brain and mind power that you have available to you at any one time. And this increases creativity and awareness and you know, your deeper understanding of things rather than just a conscious understanding. So, you know, simply taking that awareness that we talked about in the last show and perhaps bringing that to words is a good, you know, a good way to get a grasp on NLP and hypnotic states, when you actually consider, what are other people constantly repeating to you to make your reality solid? You know, what are they constantly telling you should do? What are you telling yourself in your own mind, you know, that you must do this or that? Which of your ideas are you discrediting by using the words like but? Or using words like if to create uncertainty? And you have to remember that these are all words that have evolved in the English language, and the English language is a part of society, obviously. So if you look at elements of society that are quite negative, language and the use of language is intrinsically linked to those areas just as much. And becoming mindful of that and changing your language to be empowering can make a big difference. So what happens when you make your language empowering is you take away the power from external sources of, you know, perceived authorities or perceived sources of wisdom externally. And we talked last time about how you project power onto thoughts and emotions and give them power. They take away power from yourself. In much the same way, external sources take away power from yourself too. So, for example, someone who's seeking security would often find that, you know, they're projecting that security onto a government or police, maybe, but perhaps, you know, the local police or just police in general. So what happens then when people begin feeling insecure is that they bolster that external. So they say, you know, we need more police, more, you know, laws, stricter laws, you know, more enforcement, more control. Someone who realizes that their sense of security comes from within and that external you know, simply helps them feel better internally, can realize that, you know, that sense of control is kind of, you know, just covering up that insecurity rather than dealing with it, if you know what I mean. So another idea is, you know, self-confidence or confidence. If you give that power away, then externally the representation of that self-confidence is, you know, perhaps social standards, you know, especially younger people, perhaps, you know, fashion, ideas in school, you know, what is like achievement when you consider grades and so forth, you know, even in our society, what is considered achievement, and a lot of people align confidence with that rather than bringing it out from within themselves. And the result of that is that we try harder, we push ourselves harder, and think, you know, we have to be more like that person. We look to those idols that we've defined externally. When we define an idol externally, well, that's happening is we're projecting, you know, our own positive qualities and, you know, that confidence onto them. And for this, it's a matter of realizing that we're doing that and bringing it back, you know, bringing that sense of self-confidence back. So it's no longer in those external idols. What you find when you begin doing this process with things such as security, you know, confidence, is that the external world really loses a lot of power. You realize that you're really, you know, the source of that power. You gave it the power to control you. Whereas you can exert that control and power from within yourself. You don't need those external supports a lot of the time. Another example that people aspire to is, you know, simple goodness, you know, being a good person or being, you know, an honest person. And here we have, obviously, laws again, and, you know, religion is quite a big part of that, because people turn to religion and externalize this sense of, you know, wanting to be good, and they kind of align concepts of, like, in the Bible or certain beliefs that exist in that religion, certain tenets, commandments, even, you know, following commandments, which have a lot of, you know, shoulds and, you know, must not do that. Whereas what you're actually doing when you're following something external is you're trying to align yourself once again with that external power rather than recognizing within yourself what it is that you're, you know, seeking, you know, to feel like a good person. You know, what does that mean for you? And by asking that question, those types of questions, you tend to find that the source of true spirituality and true, you know, all those states that you're trying to achieve by externalizing, they're actually within you. You don't really need that crutch of, you know, you can still participate in elements of society like, you know, the church and so forth, but you're recognizing that that's not actually giving you, you know, that power. It's not giving you a sense of honesty or doing good. You're actually, you know, receiving that from there. It's simply you're expressing that and choosing to participate in the world with that in mind. So before I move on to, you know, other ways that we kind of compromise our own sense of power, and how we can bring it back to ourselves, I'd just like to take a couple of minutes break. And when we come back, we'll, you know, talk more about hypnotic states that you can use for cultivating inner power. BBSRadio.com. All right, we're back with Awaken Your High Mind. Before, we were talking about empowerment and disempowerment and how certain hypnotic states and NLP suggestions are used on a wider scale in society to create a sense of disempowerment in people, constantly putting people down on a mass scale. And what we're talking about here is getting back to that state of inner empowerment, you know, taking action for your own life rather than simply accepting unconditionally the ideas that other people are broadcasting. So a good way of looking at this is the cause and effect scale. On the effect end of things is where obviously people in power would want you to be, because that gives them more power. This is a state where people are constantly reacting to their reality. Reacting to a certain emotion, reacting to a certain state. This person did that to me, therefore I'm going to react in this way. And it's just a constant barrage of reactions. And we're constantly creating reasons, reasons for why we can't do this, reasons for why we can't do that. On the other end of the scale is the cause. The cause, you can become the cause for change rather than being the reaction. So using this approach, we create results in our lives rather than simply making up reasons and reacting. And this is kind of a good technique because it doesn't necessarily say that all of this programming and all of this hypnotic suggestion in our world needs to be analyzed and kind of removed. It simply says, you're blocking yourself off. Generally, you're not, letting other people bring out reactions in you and creating reasons that other people have done something to you. Therefore, you can't achieve something, because if you think about it, that's pretty disempowering. To say if only I had a better degree, or if only I had more friends, or a better partner, or more business, then that's coming up with reasons like that. It's so disempowering rather than allowing yourself to create results. So this is, a really good approach to actually not worry about all the negative programming for a moment and to simply say, I'm not going to take those kind of suggestions on, full stop. I'm going to take control for my own life. And that can create really major change quickly. We were talking earlier about how these core states that we need, to survive, to live in the world, like security and confidence, are often placed at that effect scale. We're constantly reacting. What can I do? What can I feel to get that self-confidence or that security? How do I need to kind of lobby lawmakers, to get more police to enforce the local area to feel secure? Will I wait, for the next, once the financial situation is stable, to make a certain financial decision? A lot of people also, another one they use is to be intelligent. I need, to have completed school or college, or to have a PhD or whatever it might be. And it's actually the belief that causes people to be either intelligent or not intelligent. Someone who believes that they can make intelligent decisions, it doesn't really matter about their external education a lot of the time. It's simply that belief that's important. And that's what, a lot of hypnotherapy is all about. It's looking at those beliefs that others have placed in us. And if you think about it, it's massive, that whole idea that schooling is congruent with success and intelligence. It's just, so major that people pretty much accept it as absolute truth. There's no questioning of that at all, or very little in the mainstream, at least. And it's ideas like that, I need to be a good Christian, for example. I need to go to church every week. That will give me that feeling. But is that is that external situation really what gives you that feeling? And by asking those kind of questions, we realize that there's this immense, unimaginably immense sense of control that the external world holds over all of us. And, that's the first step to breaking free from that and, shaking off, the shackles, so to speak, of that control, is by recognizing that it's there. So a lot of people simply make statements like, the economical situation is really bad, or, the government is corrupt, so I'm not even going to bother trying. And this puts them back on the effect scale. They're simply reacting to reality rather than creating it. So even a lot of people turn to New Age concepts and spiritual ideas and religion. And it's the concept that they use to say, if I meditate more, I go to church more, then I'll be able to gain more wisdom, and then I'll be able to gain more insight into myself. You know, well, a lot of the time, you know, that may be true that you're actually putting effort into it. A lot of people will just feel guilty. You know, they won't go, or they won't meditate, and then they'll feel guilty as a result of a reaction to that belief. So it kind of begs the question, what's the point of holding on to this? You know, what's the point of punishing yourself? You know, certainly that's how a lot of external programming wants us to feel, you know, punish yourself because you're not being good enough. But you know, it doesn't matter in the grand scheme of things. And once you realize that, I guess you realize that these are all concepts that we project, these perfect archetypes, you know, being good or being, you know, fundamentally like finding true love, for example, finding financial success, or being law-abiding, or you know, having a perfect friendship. None of these concepts are, you know, existent in reality, yet a lot of us hold on to them in our minds. And that obviously creates a lot of, you know, stress, you know, guilt and anxiety. And we don't really, you know, there's no need to hold on to that because there's something better than the idealized concept. There's the practical reality. So a lot of, you know, a lot of the time I've found personally that meditation is, you know, quite an amazing technique. But a lot of the time when I talk about it to other people, especially not really involved in spirituality circle, they put up a lot of resistance to that because in their mind it's an ideal or a concept. Like, you know, I don't have the discipline of a guru, or that's boring, or whatever it is. It's a concept in their mind that they're responding to. Whereas from my perspective, when I talk about meditation, I'm responding from the, like, I'm talking from the practical experience, and, you know, I know I've gained benefits from it, and all of these really great experiences. But a lot of people are still in that mental concept. So something even as simple as, you know, going back into the right here and now is a good way to get out of those concepts that exist as rigid ideas in our mind. Simply saying, you know, what's the practical implication of this right now is a good approach. And sometimes it's just a matter of transforming the way that you see things yourself, you know, your self-image. Because if you actually look at a lot of, you know, really interesting people in history like Carl Jung, or Albert Einstein here, you'll find that they were really, you know, at the fringe of their respective fields, and they did things very differently to mainstream. And now, of course, you know, now you'll find that a lot of, you know, science would actually say that, you know, these individuals were very respected, and their ideas were really, you know, really respected and really profound. But in reality, you know, if you go back to that time, you know, both Carl Jung and Albert Einstein, you know, both had a very interesting way of doing things that was rejected in their respective fields at the time. But, you know, once they actually broke through and stuck with their own ideas, rather than just simply taking criticism and saying, you know, I'm not going to bother, now in people's reality, in people's minds, these individuals are actually seen as, you know, having achieved something great. And you'll find that those types of people, you know, they don't blame others. They don't say, you know, they had a, you know, bad teacher, or abusive parents, or they were sick, or the world is unfair, or depressed, or, you know, they don't have enough education, not enough time, you know, not enough experience. It's all of these reasons that tend to hold us back. Whereas, you know, you don't really need anything apart from yourself, you know, just having that self-image and being who you are and expressing that to create positive changes in your reality. And once you're congruent in that way, you begin to develop that inner sense of confidence that you don't need to derive from external sources. And obviously, you know, this is really bad for people that spend billions and billions of dollars, you know, trying to align, you know, self-image or confidence with the latest, the latest fashion, the latest product. Trying to align sense of security with, you know, these really extravagant, expensive security systems. You know, I know someone who lives close by here in a very, very safe neighborhood, practically no crime at all, who just constantly spends more and more money on security and, you know, making sure the fence is, you know, really high and alarm is triggered, you know, even if someone just steps like on the floor in one of those proximity triggered alarms, and just going way overboard. And you find examples like this all the time, you know, people spending hundreds and hundreds of dollars, you know, constantly on the latest products, latest clothes or whatever it may be, that align with that sense of self-image. It's just so deeply entrenched in our minds by the constant programming that we go out and react to that. And before you know it, you know, you're really like just serving that external power rather than yourself. And you can really lose yourself if you do that too much. So even a lot of it is about changing the way you communicate, changing the way you use language and the way you use awareness. And that can really help create external change too, because you're not actually going out there and saying, no, you shouldn't do that, you mustn't, you know, simply align your self-image with that stuff. Like if you know someone, you know, in your life who does that, which I'm sure you may, because if you tell someone, you know, you can't do that, you can't live your life that way. Once again, you know, we talked about those words, and NLP is about influence, you know, creating influence. And when you talk about influence, it's practically 99% unconscious. So rather than, you know, telling someone that you shouldn't, you know, dress like you're trying to prove a point or something by spending all this money and building your external self-image and then feeling crap about yourself. Because if you use words like shouldn't and, you know, can't and must, then that's also, you know, kind of only talking to the conscious mind. If you tell someone they must do something, then they may actually do that, you know, what you're telling them. But the change won't be authentic or genuine, because they're simply following an external command, as they're getting constantly through society every day, you know, thousands of those commands. And from themselves, you must do this, you must do that. And none of them are authentic. The authentic ones are those that simply allow, that simply, you know, allow the unconscious mind to come through with its own wisdom. And you're kind of just talking to yourself, you know, self-talk and to others, and allowing that to come through rather than, you know, defining it on a conscious level and saying, you know, this must be that way, and this is bad and this is good and so forth. Instead, you're just, you know, using words like may, you know, you're allowing things to be a certain way. And when you allow, what isn't required will fall away, and what is good for yourself and for others kind of tends to come through. Another major aspect of hypnosis that we mentioned briefly was technique of, you know, relaxing, because when your mind is relaxed, the barriers drop and you become more susceptible to information coming in. And, you know, a lot of, you might not think you get relaxed on TV, you know, while there's constant, you know, shooting violence, these really extreme scenes that are on television a lot of the time. You are actually quite relaxed, because interestingly, television uses a certain frame rate, and when you constantly look at the TV after 5 or 10 minutes, all these frames flickering, you're actually, you know, in a really deep state of mind, strangely enough. So you're almost like hypnotized to the TV. And this is really powerful, because on the one level, what you're watching is actually really quite disturbing a lot of the time. On another level, you're actually really open to that. So that's, you know, that's pretty dangerous. I actually read a book, I can't remember the name now, a while back, but this guy was talking about how churches use, you know, that soft harmonic music in the background that you can barely hear, and stuff like that, you know, stuff like repetitive music that's barely audible, and you'll find on continuous frame rate, like on television, they all put people into hypnosis because they all use repetition and can deepen that trance. And it's really interesting because, you know, if you tell someone, give someone a specific suggestion, they're, you know, dozens of times more likely to accept it while under even a mild hypnotic trance. And these hypnotic trances, they come about so easily and people are often so unaware of them. So, you know, a good technique that I'll mention that you can use is a simple relaxation technique to get a feeling for what it's like to be entranced into that state of trance, where, you know, you almost feel like someone is calling your name, but you want to stick with whatever it is you're doing, that sense of concentration. And this relaxation technique allows you to experience that and to actually let it go, to make sure that you're not, you know, unconditionally accepting people's suggestions, so to speak. So basically what this technique involves is focusing on your breathing as an anchor point. Not sure if we mentioned this last time, but I think we mentioned focusing on a part of your body, and you know, that's your anchor. Whenever you feel that your awareness is slipping away or getting too involved in an emotion, you focus on that part of your body again. Well, with this technique, the aim is to focus on breathing. And to practice, it's just a matter of taking deep breaths rather than shallow breaths. So, you know, simply breathing in through your nose for a good 5 seconds or so before breathing out. And taking these, you know, 5 second breaths after about 2 or 3 minutes. I mean, you probably won't notice anything straight away, but after 2 or 3 minutes, you'll actually notice you're a lot more relaxed and still. And what happens when you bring about these states of relaxation in yourself is that you notice when other people or you know, even other devices like the TV bring them about in yourself, and you can then pick up on that and say that, you know, I'm going into a bit of a suggestible state now. And sometimes, you know, breaking suggestible states is really easy. It's just as simple as looking away for a second. If you're entranced and simply just looking to the other side of the room, that can break the trance. So what the purpose of this relaxation technique is, of simply deep breathing for a few minutes, is to realize your own physiology and what happens to you when you go into a trance state. You usually find that a lot of hypnotists use a very similar technique, you know, intense focus, but the focus may be on something else. It won't necessarily be on your breathing. But if you actually focus all your awareness on your breathing, you know, don't, you know, let yourself kind of sway, and you may notice thoughts and emotions come up, and that's fine. But then when that happens, allow yourself to bring that awareness back to your breathing. And, you know, whatever it is you may be doing or feeling at that moment, you can just allow that to be. And while you do that, you go back to your breathing. And, you know, even a good way, if you, in case you lose concentration, is to simply follow your breath down into your abdomen and back up. And that way your entire awareness is in your body. And yeah, after a few minutes, you'll find yourself feeling very relaxed and very comfortable. And from that state, obviously, you can create your own suggestions too about how you want to feel, what types of beliefs you want to be holding on to, what types of ideas you want to be holding on to. And there's a lot of applications with hypnosis and trance state. And one of them that I'd actually like to explore next week is astral projection and lucid dreaming, which you may have heard of, or you may not have. It's a technique of conscious dreaming. So when we fall asleep at night, you know, most people, they don't give it much thought, and they just simply dream or some don't dream and they just think that dreams are, you know, a part of life. But people who practice astral projection and lucid dreaming actually recognize that dreams are, you know, the portal way to the soul, so to speak. And through our dreams, we can connect to other realities, you know, to other beings, to our higher selves. And there's an entire myriad of possibilities that we can experience with lucid dreaming. And, you know, now we can begin building on some of the techniques I've talked about in the past 2 weeks, you know, like self-awareness and recognizing, you know, different states of consciousness. You can use this to create, you know, really more profound experiences for yourself, like lucid dreams. So we'll talk about how you can simply become aware on a mental level to bring about lucid dreaming, because, you know, all dreaming is non-awareness or unawareness. You're kind of experiencing the dream from a hazy state. It's that unawareness, and that's how a lot of people go through life. What you find once you become more self-aware and gain more awareness of your reality is that lucid dreaming comes naturally to you, and you're not only very sharp and focused throughout the day, but during the evening when you fall asleep, your dreams also become more vivid. They become more meaningful. You can have these, you know, conscious experiences in dreams where you're as conscious as you are in this reality. I've actually experienced dreams that I felt more, you know, I felt them more real than this reality, so to speak, which I'll talk about. Yeah, this is a really interesting area that we can explore. And hopefully at the start of the next show, also allocate some time where, if you like, you could call in regards to your response to this radio show and any feedback that you have or any questions or comments, to make this a bit more of an interactive process. All right. Thank you once again for tuning in and listening. I'm Alexander Defoe, and I'll see you next time.